Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Network Sunday, January 27th, 2019. This is episode 1561. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LastPass. Make password management a priority in 2019. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business and reduce the threat of breach at lastpass.com/twit. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, it's Tech Guy time. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got some smartphone news. We got some smartwatch news. No, there's no news on smartwatches, but we I can answer questions about them. Augmented reality, virtual reality. Microsoft's announcing its new HoloLens, we think, in a few weeks at Mobile World Congress. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number if you want to get in the conversation. Get in it. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. Well, you can still call. Just to use Skype, it'll still be free. 8888-ASK-LEO. There is a website. What kind of tech guy would I be if I didn't have a website? I have many websites. Many. But the one for this show is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And what else should I tell you? Oh, there's a great chat room. So we do a lot of people are listening live in the radio show. And so for that reason, we have a chat room going on for the people who are watching and listening live. We give them little special access if you're invited at techguylabs.com. Okay. All right. All the business is out of the way. Mark Zuckerberg wrote a opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal on Thursday. It's interesting that he's doing this. Why would Mark Zuckerberg put an opinion piece in the... Well, the opinion piece was called The Facts About Facebook. And it was really what it was all about was a description of Facebook's business model and how we're just nice people doing our job, trying to connect the world. And, I think he made a fairly strong case for why Facebook does the things it does, like, for instance, collect information about you. He said, let me get the exact quote so I can. He said, it's important to get this right because there are clear benefits to this business model of, giving you a free product, a free service, and then supporting it with ads. He says, by the way, we never sell your information to advertisers. That would be against our interest because that's our bread and butter, is that what we know about you. What we tell them is if you want to reach such and such a person, here's how you do it. Oh, by the way, there's some evidence that you could even, as an advertiser, reach a specific individual, buy an ad just for one person. But generally, that's not very efficient. Facebook's a very efficient way to advertise to a specific group of people and to make an ad that's designed specifically for them, just a few thousand people. In fact, if you look at Facebook's list of advertisers, typically the typical ad campaign on Facebook is less than $100. And that's because it's that particular one ad is highly targeted for a specific group of people, Swedes who like pancakes for breakfast, and that's very efficient. So it's relatively inexpensive, but they do many of these, right? He says, so it's important to get this right because there are clear benefits to this advertising business model. Billions of people get a free service to stay connected to those they care about and to express themselves. I think at this point, Mark is talking to legislators in the U.S. and in Europe, many of whom read the Wall Street Journal, right? Say, please don't regulate us. Because he then says, and small businesses, which create most of the jobs and economic growth around the world, you wouldn't want to mess with that, would you? Small businesses get access to tools that help them thrive. There are more than 90 million small businesses on Facebook, and they make up a large part of our business. Most couldn't afford to buy TV ads or billboards. But now you could buy radio ads, though. They're very affordable. Little pitch for the business. But now they have access to tools that only big companies could use before. In a global survey, half the businesses on Facebook say they've hired more people since they joined. They're using our services to create millions of jobs. Please, you wouldn't want to regulate that, would you? Please. I think he makes a strong case. I think he does. Of course, he doesn't mention all the little things. You know, the little the Facebook psychologic experiments on its users, which it performed several times a couple of years ago. And the reason we know that is because they published articles about it in scientific journals. Look, we were able to make people depressed by modifying their news feed. Isn't that amazing? I think those articles wouldn't be published today, to be honest. But at the time, Facebook was very proud of what they could do. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I think most people who are on Facebook these days will tell me, when I say, get off Facebook, it's not a safe space. They will tell me, they'll say, well, it's the only way I can keep touch with family and friends. This is how I keep touch with them. Keep in touch. Mark says, people consistently tell us, what do you think? This is what he says. People consistently tell us if they're going to see ads, they want them to be relevant. That means we need to understand their interests. A recent survey said that a vast majority of Facebook users had no idea that they were collecting information about them to target ads. They had no idea. This was a Pew survey of several thousand people. Let me see if I can find the details. And in the survey, they asked them, did you know, or I don't know exactly how they asked it, but does Facebook know information about you and use it to target ads? And it was a huge number. I think 74% said no, and I didn't know they did that. And then when they showed them there's a page. Did you know this? There's a page that you can go to in your Facebook. Actually, I think this is recent, since GDPR. There's a page that shows you what Facebook knows about you. Yeah, 74% did not know the social networking company maintains a list of their interests and traits to target them with ads. So when researchers directed them to view the Facebook ad preferences pages, a majority, contrary to what Mark says, a majority of Facebook users said, we're uncomfortable with that. Of course, it's how you ask the question. Because Mark probably said, do you want to see ads that are more relevant to your interests? People probably say, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. If Mark asks the question, do you mind if we collect information about you so that we can do that? People say, no. And then an interesting fact, 27% in this Pew study of people, once they looked at that page, said those don't accurately represent my interests at all. What do you think? Are you happy? I would rather see relevant ads. And if Facebook really doesn't give my information to anybody, but just uses it to make the ads more relevant, that's fine. That doesn't bother me. It's things like trying to change my mood. Mark said, oh, we don't do that. We don't do that. People assume we do things we don't do. For instance, we don't sell people's data. That would reduce the unique value of our service. Well, they did leak some data, didn't they, to Cambridge Analytica? Not about specific people, I guess. I don't know. What do you think? Mark's clearly saying to legislators and regulators, oh, don't regulate us. And by the way, some members of Congress are a little worried because there was an article on Friday in the New York Times saying Facebook is going to unify Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram. It's three major properties, each with billions of users each, so that you could message somebody from Facebook Messenger, message somebody from WhatsApp, message somebody to Instagram, Instagram to WhatsApp, unify that all. And a number of legislators have said, well, boy, if we'd known that, maybe we should have thought about antitrust measures when they made those acquisitions. We didn't, but maybe we should have. 8888 Ask Leo. I know you don't want to talk about that. You want to talk about why your printer doesn't work. You can call me, ask that too. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's talk high tech. What do you say? Beautiful day. It's a good day to talk high tech. Give me a ring. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Ms. Kim Schaffer, our phone angel, answering the phones for us on this fine Sunday morning. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Did you have a nice Saturday night?
I did.
Yes.
I was asleep by 10.
That's a good... Now I know you're of a certain age.
I'm an old lady.
You're not, but you live in large like one.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have my happy hour with the friends at 4, and yeah. I'm home by 6.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
It's a good life. Well,
that really something
no
does... Yeah, something does happen at some point in your life. With any luck, earlier, sooner than later, where you just go, I always want to go to bed.
Well, for me, I think it's kind of been later, but...
Yeah. You know, it's fine. It's okay.
I still have my moments, I admit it, but...
Well, you do work in a pub.
I do work in a pub, so it is hard to escape the temptations.
Now, Kim has been answering the phone since early this morning, and that's why we wanted to go to bed early. So she will rise early, bright and bushy-tailed, and answer the phone. And who should I talk to?
Steve in Lomita. I think he's trying to get internet, I don't know about for free, but he's trying to figure out a way to not pay a monthly fee. Or if there's standalone device that gets internet without paying a monthly
subscription. How can you get internet for free?
Yeah, I'd like to know.
I would like to know that too. Steve, Lomita, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Kim.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call, and I apologize in advance for my silly question. I'm trying to find out if there is such a thing as a standalone device that would get, like, internet, email, printing capabilities without me getting a monthly bill. Is there such a device? Do you know?
That's an interesting question. There have been, and I don't, there was, a, there are, yes, I think there are. There have been companies that did this. One was called Freedom Pop. Let me see if they're still around. The way they paid for it, though, is with advertising. So the deal is it costs money to provide you with internet, just like it costs money to provide you with water, power. You know, there's no such thing, as the great Robert Heinlein once said, as a free lunch. I guess sunshine is free and the daisies and the grass. But the internet, somebody has to pay for it. If you want to be an internet service provider, it's not free for you as an ISP. You go out there, you have to put in equipment, and you go out there and you actually have to connect to somebody. And in most cases, not every, but in most cases, you have to pay to connect to somebody. The only time you don't is if you have what's called a peering arrangement, where, you know, you kind of agree to share each other's traffic, but that's rare. So, but there are companies that have, for years, tried to give you free internet. And Freedom Pop is one, and it's still around, which is interesting. Now, the way they do this, of course, if a service is free to you, like Facebook, we were just talking about that, or Google, they have to monetize it somehow. That's the modern term. We're monetizing. Make money. To make money. You know, the rent costs money. Power costs money. You got to make money to do this stuff. So they're going to make money on you somehow. Freedom Pop does it by putting ads in your internet. But, you know, I think this is an interesting idea. Go to freedompop.com. You might have to go to the library. By the way, that's the other way you get free internet. Go to your public library. Public library is the best deal out there. So go down to the public library, presuming you don't have internet right now. Go to freedompop.com and see if, you know, you can get the service in your area. They ask for your zip code. I guess that's because they're not everywhere. I'm going to check my zip code. And then they want your email address. Oh, really? So this is where it all begins. What if you don't have an email address? How can you get free internet service and not have... It's interesting. You have to have an email address, apparently. Maybe not. You can also call them. 855-703-5785. Now, they may be there may be other shenanigans they're up to besides just putting ads in their stream. They might, in fact, be collecting information about you. Nowadays, pretty much everybody is. When you put an app on your smartphone, watch what permissions it asks for. Often, even though it may not really need it, they ask for location permission. That's valuable. They could sell that. So I would check out Freedom Pop. And if anybody knows of other free internets, the other thing you can often do is go downtown. This is something, by the way, the paid internet service providers hate. In fact, they've gone to many state legislatures and outlawed municipal Wi-Fi, but it's not illegal in every state. It's not illegal in California yet, Steve. You can go see if the city offers, Petaluma, our little town, does Wi-Fi downtown. There's a couple of reasons cities are willing to do that. It's good for the economy, right? Having strong internet everywhere is a valuable thing. It attracts industry, attracts smart digital tech workers. So cities think, well, it's not that expensive. Let's do it. But companies like Comcast and Verizon don't like that too much. So they've gone. It happened in Philadelphia. Philadelphia had a very nice free internet service. Unfortunately, it also happens to be where Comcast is located. And they immediately went to the Pennsylvania State Legislature and got it outlawed. Chattanooga, Tennessee, very famous. Their power company provided very high-speed internet service in Chattanooga. I think they still do, but boy, it is controversial. Internet service providers say, well, we don't want cities competing with us. I guess that's the point, right? We don't want private industry doesn't want municipalities competing, and yet you could really make a strong case that it's actually very good for the city and the municipality and the economy and all that. And hey, a little competition shouldn't bother you if you've got such a great service, Comcast, Verizon, AT&T. A little competition shouldn't hurt, right? That's a good thing. That's America. Net Zero is another one. That's right. I forgot about Net Zero. Netzero.net. That would be another one to check out. So there are places you can get free internet, but as with any free service, it's worth thinking about what it is they get. I mean, they're not doing this out of the goodness of their heart. They're a business. So what is it that they get? Net Zero recognizes the pioneer of internet access in the late 90s. High quality, low cost internet service. All right. Worth checking out. I personally believe every person in this country should have internet access. And it should be made freely available by the government, if not by private industry, because this is so important to our democracy, I think. Let's talk smart cars. Sam Abul-Samid coming up, our car guy, right after this. He's riding in his car. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I am great. How's life?
Cold? Yeah, it's like 13 degrees
here.
In
the Motor City, it's cold.
Yeah, we missed it by a week. We usually have a standing order for a snowstorm and really cold weather for the auto show. And it showed up a week late this year.
Yeah, so. I was talking to somebody in Ohio. I said it was 5 degrees or something. Oy.
Yeah, it was supposed to get, I think the forecast for Tuesday is -4.
Oy.
Yeah. But then it warms up to into the 40s. So
it makes spring more springy.
You really appreciate it when the warm weather months come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cold here. It's like in the 50s.
Yeah, that's not cold.
I still appreciate spring. What do you want to talk about today?
Let's start talking about driver assist versus automated driving. You know, and
okay.
Try to,
all the levels.
Try to help people understand the
what
difference.
What are the levels?
What the levels really mean.
So, okay. When is the Audi? So the Taycan's not out till the fall, looks like. At best.
Yeah, I think that's when it'll be here, arriving here in the States. It should be in Europe in the summertime.
And then Audi's e-tron?
Should be out should be available here in the U.S. in April or May.
Oh, so maybe I should get an e-tron. What's the thing they're going to do next year?
So they've got the e-tron Quattro launching this spring. Yeah. And then towards the end of the year, early next year, they'll have the e-tron GT, which is based on the same platform. The e-tron Sportback. But has more of, it's a little bit lower, a little bit more a coupe-like profile to it.
That's the one I want, huh?
Yeah. And then there's the GT, which is coming in 2021, which is the one they had at the LA Auto Show that I showed you pictures of last time.
Yeah, that's the 590 horsepower.
Right. And that's based on a Taycan.
I think I want a Taycan. Apparently they're selling so fast they had to double production.
Yeah, they just announced they're gonna increase capacity for it from 20,000 a year to 40,000, and then they'll be continuing to ramp that up over the next several years as they get more battery capacity.
So Lisa's saying, well, when you're because my Tesla runs out at the end of July. Every time I see Sam, I ask him these same stupid questions. So Lisa says what we should do is just get a Leaf. I'll drive her gas vehicle until her lease runs out in a couple of years.
In 1 year.
And by then, no, it's a year from Christmas, so almost 2 years. So, and then at that time, there'll be better choices.
But the
thing I'm worried about with the Leaf is it doesn't support the new CCS charging standard.
That's true, but there, most of the fast charging stations now have both CCS and CHAdeMO connectors.
Right.
And at CES, Nissan announced the Leaf Plus, which goes on sale in February. Yeah, so that's going to have like a 225-mile range.
We'll charge it at home most of the time anyway. That will end up being Michael's car.
Right.
Yeah.
And that also gets faster charging than the current Leaf. The current Leaf is limited to 50 kilowatts. The new one can go up to 100 kilowatt charging.
Right. Good.
Are there CHAdeMO chargers? Bigger battery and faster charging.
Yeah. I think we'll probably do that. But I want the Taycan. But I don't know. Then I would be without a car for 3 or 4 months. Or we could just buy a Leaf.
Yeah, I mean the Leaf, the Leaf's going to be fairly affordable. I mean it's going to be for the Plus, it'll probably be
about 37,000. So then I'll lease the Taycan when it comes out in the fall.
Yeah,
I'm going to get in my car, and I'm going to drive along with Sam Abulsamid. He's the car guy, researcher at analyst at Navigant Research. He joins us every week. He's our newest member of the Tech Guy team to talk about cars. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Leo. How are you this
week? I'm great. It's freezing in the Motor City, I hear.
Yeah, it's a little bit chilly. It's about 13 degrees here today.
Yikes!
Supposed to have a high on Tuesday of about -4. So, but then it's going to warm up after that.
You said we should talk today about self-driving vehicles. There's a lot of confusion, and Tesla, by the way, did not help this by calling what is really a driver assist autopilot. It isn't an autopilot. It doesn't.
If you actually look at what autopilot systems and aircraft do, it's actually not that far off from autopilot systems do, because those are actually pilot assist systems. They're not self-flying systems.
But people assume when they hear autopilot that they can go to sleep and let the car drive, which is a very bad idea.
Which is unfortunate, and it's unfortunate that we've seen a lot of videos on YouTube and other places of owners, primarily of Teslas, but occasionally of some other stuff, people, taking a nap or climbing into the back seat and doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
Don't do that. Right. In fact, Tesla is really pretty aggressive in their software. It's about checking to see if your hands are on the wheel and making you tap the wheel every once in a while.
They've gotten more aggressive have been more issues, people getting into crashes because they haven't been paying attention.
Right.
So that's what I wanted to talk a little bit about, was the difference between driver assist systems and full automated driving or highly automated driving. The Society of Automotive Engineers, of which I've been a member for more than 30 years, one of the things that they do is they define standards, industry standards, for all kinds of things, various test procedures, the way that manufacturers, for example, test towing ratings, so you can compare everything, side by side. And one of the things they did a few years back is they defined a taxonomy or a language for automated driving. And, a lot of people probably heard of these six levels of driving, from level zero, which is, like my car, my 1990 Miata that has no driver assist features. It's all manual, up through level five, which is a fully automated vehicle that can drive anywhere, anytime, under any conditions, and which doesn't actually exist and probably won't exist for a long time to come.
So what's the best you can get right now? Is like that Cadillac CTS you took me for a ride in.
Yeah, so that's what we call a level, you know, kind of a level two system. You know, part of the problem is the way those levels are defined is a little vague, and they're kind of broad. But that's what we call a partially automated system.
So it does a couple of things. It will do lane keeping. Mm-hmm. So it'll steer the car. You can actually, in this case, it's looking at your eyes, not your hands. Yeah. So on the Cadillac, so you can keep your hands off the wheel. You can sit there with your hands folded, but you need to watch the road, and it will alert you. It'll vibrate you pretty vigorously if you're not watching the road.
It vibrates your seat.
Yeah.
And it also starts flashing a light bar in the top of the steering wheel.
It will this newer kind of cruise control where it slows down and stops if the car in front of you slows down and stops, and then it'll pick up again if the car moves again. I find that I do that in my Tesla. It's great for stop and go driving.
Yeah, that's called adaptive cruise control, and
love
it uses
that.
A radar sensor in the front of the car that measures the distance and the closing speed to the car in front of you. And so when you know in the old days, you know, you'd set your cruise control to 70 miles an hour or whatever the speed was. And, you know, the car would just try to maintain that speed, regardless of what was going on around it. And then, you know, in the last 15 years, they've gotten smarter and they added these radar sensors to detect that distance to the car ahead of you. So now when the car ahead of you slows down, the adaptive cruise will automatically slow you down. And that's what we call a level one system.
I like that. It maintains a safe stopping distance at all times, no matter what your speed. What it won't do is stop at a stoplight.
It won't stop at stoplights, so it's not reading traffic signals, but it's following the car in front of you. So if there's nobody in front of you, then it's just going to continue to try to control it at whatever speed you set. And so systems that control just one function, like either the speed or the steering, like lane keeping assist systems, those are level one systems. When you combine two of those together, that becomes a level two system. That's what the Cadillac CT6 has with its Super Cruise. That's what Autopilot does, and systems from a number of other manufacturers like Volvo's Pilot Assist. Those are level two systems, but they're not designed to drive on their own. They're designed for the driver to still be engaged. You still have to be ready to take over control at any moment, because these systems are not perfect. The sensors, you know, are still limited in their functionality, and they can't do everything. So you now you still have to be paying attention.
I think if you understand that, it actually is very useful. I feel safer when I use that autopilot. As long as I pay attention, I'm safer than if I didn't have it. It really helps me drive better, I think.
Right, and the thing that Tesla, actually pretty much everybody in the industry up until now, has done differently from what Cadillac is doing, is the way they figure out if the driver is still there paying attention is there's a steering angle sensor in the wheel, and it's looking for slight motions. You know, when your hands are on the wheel, there's always a little bit of motion there. They're never completely still. So it's looking for that motion to decide, you know, determine if you're still paying attention. Unfortunately, that's not always necessarily a very good indicator. You know, if you actually do hold your hands fairly still, a lot of times it'll give you a false positive. So you end up getting these alerts that you don't need to get. Because
I get them all the time. It's almost annoying, but it's still, again, I think it's safer. Now, the Tesla does something unusual, which is if you want, it will change lanes for you. All you have to do is hit the turn signal. It'll look and see if it's clear, although my experience is it's not perfect. You still want to look. And then it'll change lanes for you. Does the Cadillac do that too?
The Cadillac doesn't do that right now, and that's what we refer to as auto lane change. One other brand that does do that right now is Mercedes-Benz on their intelligent drive system. So both the Tesla and the Mercedes, you tap the steering wheel, and it uses the sensors on the side of the car to look to see if there's anybody in the adjacent lane on whichever direction. So if you want to change lanes to the left, it'll look to your left using the blind spot sensors. And if it's all clear, then it will automatically steer the car into the adjacent lane and then, you know, start tracking that new lane.
The technologies these cars use are cameras, as you mentioned, radar, and then some self-driving vehicles use LiDAR. Are there any production cars that use LiDAR?
There is one production model right now that has LiDAR, but it's not really being used yet, and that's the new Audi A8.
They tend to be very expensive, LiDAR, and it's making a 3D image of everything around the vehicle. So I think a lot of people believe LiDAR is the best way to do autonomous self-driving.
It's generally believed to be one of the three key components. And actually, there's increasingly moves towards adding a fourth, which is infrared and thermal imaging, night vision.
And animals, which is very helpful.
To help you detect live objects.
Yeah.
Each of the different kinds of sensors, whether it's LiDAR, radar, cameras, they all have different strengths and weaknesses. And so you want to, what engineers try to do is use them together with a little bit of overlap so you have redundancy. So, radar is good for seeing through fog and mist, which cameras can't do. And LiDAR kind of struggles with, but it doesn't get, radar won't give you a really high definition, at least current radars won't give you a high definition view of what's around.
Sam Abul-Samed, it is so great to talk to you. We will talk again next week. Navigant Research. Have a great day. And is there anywhere we can read more about your stuff? Where do you publish?
I publish some stuff on Forbes. You can find my occasional articles on there.
Okay.
I have a podcast called Wheel Bearings at wheelbearings.media with my pal Don.
Sam, we're out of time. Thank you. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. Oh, we love LastPass here at the TWIT Eastside Studio. It's what we use to keep track of all of our passwords. Every business really needs to use LastPass. I am a firm believer. You know that as a home user, you got to use a password manager. Keep track of all your passwords. LastPass is the best. It's true trust no one encryption. Every one of your passwords, that password vault, everything in it. And by the way, I trust it so much, I don't just put passwords. I put serial numbers, database logins. I put my social security numbers in there, my driver's license, my passport. I even put my SSH and PGP private keys in there. That's how safe LastPass is. It's decrypted only on the device. People at LastPass can't access it. They don't have access to your keys. Only you do. That is important. Number one, your stuff is safe. Number two, if you're not using a password manager to generate your passwords, and if your employees aren't, you're definitely at risk. Employees, they're going to use the same password over and over again. You make them change it, they're going to add a one to it. LastPass lets you enforce up to 100 different policies, including master password requirements. It lets you enable password resets. We require two-factor authentication. I think that's really important. LastPass supports everything from YubiKey and Duo Security, as well as Google Authenticator. LastPass has its own authenticator, which is nice because it doesn't do the six digits. It just does an approve, deny button, which is actually a little bit more secure, I think. LastPass has it all. In fact, Steve Gibson interviewed the creator, looked at the source code, and gave it his thumbs up. Steve Gibson, our security guy, uses LastPass. We use it here for the enterprise. I use it at home. And by the way, millions of people use LastPass. And 43,000 businesses use LastPass. Breaches are maybe the worst thing that can happen to your business. A breach not only affects you, but all your customers. Don't be that company that's in the headlines tomorrow saying, all the information leaked out. LastPass. LastPass. It's the solution. There's LastPass Teams for small businesses, 50 or fewer. LastPass Premium, that's the personal version. LastPass Families, that's what we use at home for the entire family. And, of course, at work, we use LastPass Enterprise. It is the password manager that protects you, protects your business, lets your employees get the job done, share passwords and all of that without compromising your security. Pretty simple. LastPass.com/twit. We're going to be at the LastPass event at RSA. If you're going to RSA, ask your LastPass rep for the password to the Bourbon and Branch party, and I'll be there. Jason Howell, Megan Maroney, we're going to host it at RSA this year. So that's going to be fun. And find out more about LastPass. LastPass.com/twit. We thank them for securing our enterprise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. From Fillmore, California, Joe is on the line. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm going great. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yay.
I'm calling because I'm having a problem with my airplane mode. I can't turn it off. It's I must have erased an adapter or something, and it's on.
What kind of phone is it?
No, not my computer.
Oh, on your laptop. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it a laptop computer, Joe?
Yeah, yeah, it's a laptop.
And you have one of those, some laptops, many laptops have a function key that puts you in airplane mode. Do you have that on your laptop?
Yeah, I tried that function, pressing function and pressing the print screen thing.
Yeah.
Button, and it doesn't do anything. It's
yeah.
Still do it out.
So your Wi-Fi adapter is, and it's Wi-Fi, right, that you want to use?
Yeah, I'm trying to get on Wi-Fi, but then I'm trying to plug it directly into the modem thing, and it still doesn't let
me. Even with a hardwired. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. What version of Windows are you running?
10.
Okay. Yeah, hard for me to diagnose this from a long distance, but I think your instinct is right that something has gone wrong with the driver software. So any laptop that has networking has both hardware and software. And in the case of most computers, the hardware, there's two kinds of hardware. There's a wired Ethernet interface. That's what you tried when you physically connected it. And there's a wireless Wi-Fi interface. Those are two different physical hardware chips. One has a radio, obviously. Most of them are on the logic board. So there's that. And then there's also software that sits above it that connects Windows, the operating system, to the hardware. It interprets it and translates for it. Every bit of hardware on your computer has a driver. So it sounds like it seems unlikely that both hardware interfaces would die at the same time. So it sounds like... And in fact, it's unlikely that it's different drivers for the Ethernet, which is the hardwired one, and the Wi-Fi, which is the wireless one. Those are two different drivers even. So it seems unlikely even that would be messed up. More likely, and this is unfortunately more problematic, there's something wrong with your network stack. When this happened, when you put it in airplane mode, or?
No, I erased some unnecessary files that...
Oh, never erase unnecessary files. Maybe they weren't so unnecessary. Is that what you think, Joe?
Yeah, my computer told me that these files can clean it out, and I put yes.
Oh, that's all right. If the computer... Now, look, if it's Microsoft's cleanup facility doing that, that's safe. If it's a third-party program, that's less safe. Was it just Microsoft that was doing that?
Yeah, I asked it to clean up the save some space thing, and I did, and I put yes.
That's safe. I don't think that did it, although that's interesting that it broke it, huh? Well, there are a few things you can do. It's a little bit more complicated to talk you through it than it is to actually sit down and do it. But one of the things that happens with some network interfaces is they go asleep. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to put in the show notes something Scooter X, our chat room moderator, found for us on Microsoft's own support site. Can't turn off airplane mode on Windows 10 desktop PC. It's exactly the problem you're reporting. It may not be the same problem but in this conversation, there's a variety of different suggestions that would be worth trying. So let me put that there. You could, this is from 2016, so it might be out of date. It does refer to Windows 10, but you could do, you could look at techguylabs.com. We'll put that, James is back from vacation, so he's going to put that up there. But you could also Google can't turn off airplane mode on Windows 10 and Microsoft.com and see if you can find that page. But that has... Something I hesitate to walk you through, but you can go into the radio management service. Usually, if you're using Microsoft's disk cleanup tool, it's not going to erase anything. You know, it's smart enough. It's from Microsoft. It's not going to erase anything that you really need. But on the other hand, it seems like a pretty big coincidence that right after you ran that, it won't go off. There's a lot of things it could be. I don't blame you. I presume you've restarted the computer. If you accidentally erased drivers, it seems unlikely. Certainly Microsoft's tool wouldn't do that. There's one more thing. I hate to bring this up, but I might as well bring it up. I don't want to encourage people to always think when they have a problem, oh, it must be malware. And it probably isn't malware because, after all, if you've got malware in your system, the last thing they want to do is disconnect you from the internet. But sometimes malware can screw up your network stack, things like that. Not because it's been written well, but because it's been written poorly. A couple of things I'd try. I presume you've rebooted. If it's a missing driver, Windows usually will say, oh, the driver's missing, and we'll find it. You might also try rebooting your machine in safe mode. And then doing a Microsoft scan of it. And the way you do that, you reboot into safe mode on your computer. In most cases, to get into safe mode, let's see. Probably the easiest thing is to turn it on while you're still running. In the notification area, turn on safe mode and then reboot. Also, you can get into safe mode. I think it's changed. It used to be pressing function key, but I think if you hold the shift key down or Windows key R. All right, that'll do it. So get into safe mode and then run Microsoft's malware removal tool. I always think this is a good thing to do every once in a while. Microsoft, every patch Tuesday, updates this malware removal tool. And then they run a quick scan, but they don't ever do a thorough scan. So it's worthwhile every once in a while to do a thorough scan. The way you do that, you hit your Windows key and type MFT. Actually, that's not going to work anymore. Look at that. Used to work. So type Windows key command, then type MFT in the command. Nope. Wow. Doesn't work anymore, does it? Forget I mentioned it. I think this is one of the problems I have with Microsoft. This disk cleanup tool, by the way, is also rumored to be being removed. It looks like they've removed the Microsoft malicious software removal tool. There's no icon for it. You have to do a command to get to it, and that command's not working anymore. I'm looking at my Windows 10 Lenovo, which I have the latest version on, 18.09, and it looks like they took it out. Is it MRT? Maybe I meant MRT. Let's try that. No, it's usually I think it was MSFT or MFT. No. Did they really remove it? Boy, I used to recommend that all the time. Oh, wait a minute. Now it works. So Windows key, no, doesn't. Yes, it does. Oh, that was interesting. Went through a bunch of stuff. So Windows key, type CMD to open a command window and type MFT, the Microsoft Malicious Software Removal Tool. Or is it MRT? Maybe it's MRT. It is MRT. Sorry. All right. MRT. And then do a thorough scan. I apologize. I don't do this enough. Do a full scan just to make sure. And it's better if you do that in safe mode, but you could do it not in safe mode. I'm doing it right now just to be sure nothing bad's on the system. I'm sorry, Joe. I wish I could be more help. This is the kind of thing where you really need to be sitting down at the computer to see what's going on, to really understand and type a few things. Let's take a little time out. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Not doing such a good job with our last caller. I did some jumping jacks, got the brain going, and thanks to the chat room and a guy named Win Expert in the chat room, we've got a possible thing that Joe can try. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, or you want to add to an answer, 888-827-5536. Website is techguylabs.com. And thank you, Win Expert, for suggesting Joe hit the Windows key and type something very useful, network reset. So Windows key, NETWRKRESET. That'll go to the network reset section of the system settings. I didn't even know this existed. And it says, this will remove and reinstall all your network adapters and set other networking components back to their original settings. Wow. Thank you, Microsoft. You might need to reinstall other networking software afterwards, such as VPN client software or virtual switches, and your PC will be restarted. This is a great tool. Buried deep within the settings, but very, very handy. It's in the network status section of the control panel. And there's also a network troubleshooter there. But the easiest way to get to it, and this is a good tip for anybody using Windows 7, 8, or 10. Almost said 9. There's no 9. Windows 7, 8, or 10 is hit the Windows key and then type the thing that you're looking for. In this case, network reset. So, Joe, if you're still listening, that would be absolutely the next thing to do. That's a very handy little tool Microsoft has built in there. I have to say, one of the reasons, I know a lot of people, and we talk to them all the time, who said, I'm not moving off of Windows 7. It's perfect for me. I even have a friend who says, I'm never leaving Windows XP. It's perfect for me. But, of course, Windows XP is no longer supported with security patches. Starting in January of next year, Windows 7 won't be either. So Microsoft really kind of nudges everybody along, as does every manufacturer. They want you to use the most recent version of the operating system. And in general, it is the safest. There are problems, sure. Anytime any big upgrade happens, there are problems. But in general, you're going to get better results. You're going to be safer. And they've put in a lot of work in making Windows, I think, more not only more reliable and more secure, but also easier to fix. These new recovery features in Windows 10 are really new. It's only been 3 years. These newish recovery features are really quite good. And I was not aware of the network reset. I'd never had occasion to use it, but that's great. That is, thank you, WinExpert. That's a great tip. On we go. Mark in Pasadena, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I had two quick questions. One was I was looking for I wanted to find a smartphone, but I don't want to spend over $300. And I just the only thing I want, I just want a smartphone that has more than 16 gigabytes for the memory, built-in memory. I can't seem to find any over 16 unless I go to the iPhone and spend another $500.
Well, there's good news. So Apple had a very inexpensive iPhone that they were selling and then discontinued and have now brought back the iPhone SE. Now, you're not getting the latest iPhone. You're getting basically an iPhone 5S, but it will run the latest version of the operating system. And kind of coincidentally, they have a 128 gig version. That's a lot of storage. All your music, all your movies, for $299. Did you say under $300?
Yeah. Dollar under. Okay.
Well, there's tax, so it'll be up a little higher. But it's hard to say whether they've started manufacturing them again or if they just found some in a warehouse in a corner somewhere. But that's a remarkable deal. So that would be one thing to look at. And, it looks like I'm just going online. This is a refurbished product. So, by the way, refurbished is fine as long as you're getting it from the original manufacturer with a full warranty. I wouldn't buy it from a third party, but if Apple is selling it as a refurbished phone, that usually means they sold it. Somebody said, returned it without much use or any use at all. They can't sell it as new. So they have to sell it as refurbished. But as long as it's got the full warranty. So that's one thing. You might also check with an Apple store to see if they have stock. It looks like the online stock might be out. They just literally, I think it was on Wednesday, they just started putting them on sale. So your timing is very good. If you were looking for an Android device under $300, yeah, there's actually quite a few Android devices under $300. This, you know, Apple is the one that charges a lot of money.
Yeah. Motorola's, I heard, were good.
Yeah, there's a lot of choices. I wouldn't hesitate to get a Motorola. The G5, I think, is the current one, and I bet you that's $250. Let me check just at the Moto G5 or the G5S. Very nice phones, and I don't know what the amount of memory is, but it's surely more than 16 gigs. Do you want more because you want to store stuff on there, or you just like to have a little bit of extra space?
Because it seems like when I buy these little cheap PCs, like the LGs, and they have 16 gigabytes, and
you can't update them, you can't do anything with them.
Yeah, basically, after I put about 5 or 10 apps on them, they're full.
Yep. Yeah, I would look at the G family of Motorola phones. I'm pretty sure you can get, I'm looking for a price. Why don't they put a price on here? Oh, those are 16 gigs. But here's a 32 gig. The G5 Plus is 32 gigs. The G5 can be bought in 16 or 32. Yeah, 32 should be enough.
That's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. And I am, while I don't see a price, I think if you go to your cell phone company, who's your carrier?
AT&T.
Often these companies, if you go to the AT&T store, will have some good choices. I love the Motos as far as inexpensive Android phone goes. They're very they're clean. They don't have a lot of junk on them. They keep them up to date pretty much. I think that's a very good choice. $229, yeah. Scooter X is saying. $229.
Okay. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
And my other question was, I got a HP laptop, and I was thinking about buying a newer one, but they're great laptops, but I was wondering, and some of them are made, they have a little slot in the bottom so you can go from like 4 gigabyte to 8 or right. 8 to, you know, 16 or whatever. Is that safe to do or will
absolutely.
It cause like...
Absolutely. Get
to overheat or anything.
No. If they allow you to upgrade, it means there's an extra slot in there. You can go ahead and upgrade. You're going to pay more for RAM from the manufacturer, from HP. So you might shop around. You can go to, there are lots of very good places to get memory, like Crucial.com, CRUCIAL.com. Mm-hmm. And what's nice about Crucial, Kingston does this as well. When you say, I want to buy memory, they'll say, well, I need to know exactly the brand of laptop you're going to get. And then they'll sell you the right memory for that laptop. And that's important, too. And they make excellent stuff.
So is there anything else I have to do when I put that in? Do I have to reset anything else?
Nope.
Or?
You know, obviously, completely shut down the computer.
Yeah.
And then when you turn it on, it should just automatically recognize it. It'll go, oh, how nice of you. You gave me some extra memory. Aren't you sweet? Aren't you kind? You know, most computers nowadays come with 8 gigs. If you have 4 gigs on a Windows machine, it would be nice to go to 8. But if you were to draw a curve of the amount of memory on one axis and performance improvement on another axis, you can add memory and from 4 to 8, you're going to see a big performance jump. 8 to 16, a little bit less so. By the time you're over 16, you know, 16 to 32 or 24 or 64, that line's going to flatten out. The performance improvement really drops off unless you're doing, you know, working with extra big files in the CAD program or a photo editing program. Most of the time, 16 is the sweet spot. That's plenty. After that, it's a lot of money for very little performance improvement. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Yeah, like a lot of you guys, I bet. I always get extra RAM, you know, but it's, to be honest, it's probably a unnecessary expense. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. The website is techguylabs.com. That's free. There's no sign up. And it's an advantage to you because you don't have to write anything down as you're listening to the show. If you hear something you want to know more about, you can just go to techguylabs.com. We divide the website into shows. This is episode 1561, and each show into hours, and each hour into questions. And you can drill right down and find the answers you want. There's also a pretty good search engine there, so you can search for stuff. And there's even audio and video from past shows. So if you go to last week's shows, you can not only see the answer written down, but you can listen to it or watch it. Watch the question and the answer. TechGuyLabs.com. Absolutely free. It's an advantage to me because then I can say to you things like, I'll put the link on the website. Because often that's a lot easier than reading these long links out loud. TechGuyLabs.com. Don Doylestown, Ohio. Hello, Don. Leo Laporte. Is it Doylestown or Doylestown?
Doylestown.
Doylestown. I got it right. Hi, Don.
Hi.
What can I do
I
for you?
I have an old computer.
Yes, sir.
It doesn't get on the internet. It Uh-oh. Just has a database on it.
Okay.
It's running Windows 98.
Oh, my.
And
those were the days.
Yep. My dad had this computer, and
awesome.
He put a lot of information on it, which I need to get off of it.
Yep.
But I shut the computer down, pressing the normal shutdown mode,
mm-hmm.
but didn't go all the way off.
Uh-oh.
So I just shut the power off.
Okay.
And when I started to back up, it starts to start up, and then I get a message that says, replace the disk and press any key.
Oh, boy.
That doesn't help, doesn't do anything.
No, of course not. So it's older hard drive eventually wears out. All hard drives wear out if they have spinning media. Actually, I think it's safe to say all hard drives wear out eventually. The problem is you don't know when. It could be a month. It could be a year. It could be 10 years. It could be 100 years. You just don't know when it's going to wear out. Sounds like yours might have hit its lifespan. Doesn't mean all the data is gone, though, and you want that data, I understand. What you said it's a database. Is it a database program that he was using, or is it just a file with a lot of data in it?
That's a program. It's called Q&A.
Okay, yeah, I know Q&A. So
now, I can, when I start it up, I can press F1
yep.
and get to the BIOS setup utility.
Yep.
But I don't know what to do when I get there.
Nothing. Your hard drive is, you know, that's not on the drive. That's in the, you know, non-volatile memory. It's called the firmware of the computer. So you can get that far, but you can't get Windows to boot up. And that probably, now, there's a variety of things that could be wrong. The hard drive could be completely dead. That Q&A database gone, all of that. Or let's say it's not. Let's hope it's not. You didn't make a backup, did you, of this vital database, did you?
No, not really.
Yeah, okay.
Got
all right.
Something that's real old. That, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, but with any luck, it did what most drives do. Most drives don't just, boom, die. Most drives start to fail over time. And what happens is maybe some of the critical sectors where the Windows operating system lives have died, but the data in the database hasn't. Let's hope that. I'm crossing my fingers. So how would you fix this? Well, you would, first of all, stop trying to boot it up. It's not going to go anywhere. And the more you use this drive, you know, the potential for making it worse is there. So let's stop that. What you can do, though, is to open up the computer, take the drive out. Do you have another computer?
Yes.
Okay. So what you'd like to do is put, if you had a tower case, now I'm saying this is an old computer, so it's probably an IDE drive, which means, you know, a modern computer doesn't even have the cables to read that. So you're going to have to do some research. You're going to have to, you know, figure out what's going on. But what you could do is connect that drive to a new computer or bring it to somebody who knows what they're doing in this. And in all likelihood, I can't promise this, but in all likelihood, as long as the drive isn't dead, you can get that database off, that file. Now, Q&A store, which, by the way, I use Q&A. It was a great database in the day. They stored the data in a single file. And so you probably can find that database, the actual file. And then what you'd want to do is copy it onto a new computer and a new drive. But then you're going to have the second problem, which is that there is, I don't think you can run Q&A on a modern computer anymore. Let me just see. The latest version of Q&A was released in 1998, which means there's no way they made it working on a modern Windows 10 computer. So what you're going to want is something that converts a Q&A database into something more modern can read. For future reference, I know it's too late for you now, but A, never rely on an old drive. They're going to die. Always, even a new drive, have backups, copies of everything. And when you're using old software like this, 30-year-old software, well, I'm sorry, 20-year-old software, it would behoove you to export the data out of it, at least make a copy of the database file. But best thing to do was, as long as Q&A is still running, is to open up your data and export it into something that is more, that can be read by other programs. Now, there used to be a program called Sesame that was designed to take over for Q&A. I think it's still available from a company called Lantica, Lantica. So what you're going to now have to do, first thing you got to do, most important, is get that database, that file, off of the old computer and the old hard drive onto a new hard drive and a new computer. just intact. Second thing, the next thing you have to do right after that is start doing some research on how you can extract the data from it. Databases like Q&A keep files in, unfortunately, proprietary formats that if you tried to open it in a modern program, probably you couldn't do. So let me see. Lantica, lantica.com, is still around. They still make the Sesame Database Manager. And I believe it will, I'm looking at it, will still read Q&A databases. So you may be in luck. Just by, you know, I mean, honestly, if anybody else is in this situation running an old computer, back up your data, put it on a new computer, and as best you can, as long as you have the old program, export it into a format that can be read by others. Sometimes they call, one of the formats would be comma separated values or CSV. I bet you Q&A would export it as a CSV value. That's a plain text file that almost all new databases can read. So that's critical. This is a bit of a homework job for you, but good luck, because I know you want it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So this is going to be the problem. You and it might be easier just to go to your, you know, if there is somebody local, your local computer guy, and see if he can read that old drive. Because it's going to be an IDE drive. That means he's going to have a connector for it and all of that. Not going to be easy. But if you really want that data back, what was in the database?
My dad was a big scout collector.
Oh.
And he collected scout stuff, and now I'm selling it off.
Ah, so you need that information.
I need the information. He's got values and descriptions and so forth. Yeah, he's got, there's over 50,000 items.
Oh, man. So, job one is to see if you can get the data off that old drive.
Okay.
You can, I mean, you have your own, a modern computer?
Yes.
Is it a laptop or a desktop tower computer?
Well, the one I use is a laptop, but I also have a desktop, which I don't use, but it works.
You know, unless you're adept at this, probably the best thing to do, although it's going to cost money, would be to bring it to somebody and say, you know, here's the, or you can just bring them the whole computer. Here's the computer. I need the data on this drive. There are ways to, I mean, I can give you some hints to do it yourself. There's a device I often talk about from a company called NewerTech, N-E-W-E-R-T-E-C-H. They make an adapter that will work with that older drive to turn it into a USB drive, which you could then plug into your laptop. The problem with doing that is it's not going to be as easy to recover the data from it as a USB drive as it would be if you put it inside a computer. On the other hand, it's a lot easier to do this, and it's only $45. It's called the Universal Drive Adapter, and it has IDE support. So that'll be the kind of drive that was. So you can open up the dad's case. Was it a laptop or a desktop?
Desktop.
Okay, so that'll be pretty easy to go into the case. You'll see the hard drive there. You'll have to unscrew it, take off all the cables, and then treat it with kid gloves because it could be fragile. And then connect it. By the way, just one question. Somebody in the chat room mentioned this. It'd probably be worth before you do anything else. When you do go into that BIOS setup, is the drive visible there? Do you know?
Because
if it's not visible, then that means the electronics on the drive have failed, and that means it's a lot harder to recover it. But if you can see it, but it's just not booting, and I think almost certainly that's what's going on, then maybe the data's there, but just Windows is damaged. So
now this did happen once before, and what happened is the computer automatically said, "Hey, you didn't shut down correctly. Let me run a diagnostics," and it ran for a couple minutes, and then it said, "Okay, you can start up now."
Yeah, that was your warning signal. Make a copy of that database, and I'm afraid it may be too late. But so that's worth a try. If you can find somebody who's, you know, better than the Geek Squad, somebody really knows what they're doing, maybe some small old computer shop, and bring it into them. It'd be good to get somebody who's got some experience with these old stuff. Don't try to recover the drive. There's no point in that. Just try to get that Q&A database off of there. Then once you get it off, I think then you can start to crack the contents. No, not SpinRite. Don't do spin. Don't try to recover that drive. It's too late. Take the drive out, bring it to somebody who knows what they're doing, and see if they get the data. Hey, Johnny Jet. He's been everywhere, man. It's Johnny Jet, our traveling guy. JohnnyJet.com. He's back home. How was Hawaii? Was it really nice?
Oh, well, Hawaii feels like a lifetime ago. It's been a week and a half since then. I've been to San Diego. I just got in from New York City, where you can tell I have a cold. But I wish I was in Hawaii right now.
Yeah. Yeah. What were
I'm
you
actually
doing?
I'm happy to be home.
What were you doing in the Big Apple?
I was there for some meetings. There was a conference, and it's like speed dating where you have 15 minutes with destinations, you know, airlines, whatever, all different. And it's really a big flu fest because
flu fest. You went to flu fest 19.
Yeah. One person gets sick, and then I'm like, I'm trying not to shake people's hands or putting my fingers near my mouth, but it's
that's hysterical.
It's inevitable.
Flu fest. So, yeah, it's people think it's easy to be a travel writer. No, my friends, it's hard work.
Well, you know, I'm very fortunate. I'm not, you know, digging a ditch somewhere. I'm traveling the world. I'm learning tips and tricks. I rarely sit and coach when I'm flying alone just because of – and I'm buying the cheapest ticket on the plane. It's right. just because different right. tips and tricks.
You got lots of miles. You got miles. You got the points.
I got miles. I wish my bank account looked like my mileage account.
Don't we all? So Johnny joins us each week to talk about traveling better through technology. It's possible.
And it's very tough.
He's always got some good tips. What do you have for us this week?
So, you know, before the government ended the shutdown, which is great.
I was worried because we're going to Vegas next week for Lisa's birthday. We're going to go see Lady Gaga. We're going to L.A. the week after to meet with some clients. I'm doing a lot of flying, and I was worried that it might not be safe.
Well, it's safe, but there might have been some delays. So, you know, the air traffic controllers aren't going to mess around with, you know, safety.
You're right. So you never felt like you were taking your life in your hands doing all that.
No, definitely not. No. They're not going to mess around.
They're amazing people who worked without pay to keep the nation's airways
safe. But
supposedly
what jump-started Trump to make the decision was because the ATC didn't show up. Or a lot of them weren't showing up in New York, and there were, you know, the Eastern Seaboard had like 5,000 delays on Friday or Thursday, whatever day. I can't remember which day. But anyway, you know, you don't mess around with air travel.
No.
So we'll see what happens in 3 weeks. But regardless, there's an app. So if it does happen in 3 weeks, or even if it doesn't, download My TSA.
My app. TSA.
So what I like about the TSA, there's a couple things about it. So number one, it's kind of like Waze, where it's crowdsourced. So you can report how long the security line wait was.
But this is an approved app from the Transportation Security Administration.
For sure, okay. It's from the government.
iOS or Android. Nice.
Both.
Yeah.
And it's free.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if someone hasn't reported on the security line that you're going through, and you do it by airport, and also if it's a big airport, multiple terminals and security lines, you can at least get historical data on how it's been. But to avoid all that, if you're worried about – I was more worried about long security lines. So, number one, you want to get TSA PreCheck, which is $85 a year for 5 years. But if you get a certain credit card, they'll pay for it. But better yet, get Global Entry because it's $100 for 5 years and includes TSA PreCheck. And when you land from an international trip, you can zip through. But
unfortunately, due to my criminal record, I can't get that. But
well, that's a problem. That's a whole nother issue.
So, but if you can, do it.
But yes, and also what I like about this app is that you can just – you go into the app and it says ask TSA or what could you bring on the plane. It will tell you everything. Like actually, nice. I was just looking at it now. I didn't realize that you couldn't bring on 140-proof alcohol even if it was 3 ounces or less, 3.4 ounces or less.
It's flammable.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, but I never even thought about it.
No.
So
– I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So it tells you what you can bring on, what you can't, and then you can even ask them. They do a good job on Twitter and in Messenger, where you can just send them a tweet or a message, and they'll let you know what you can bring on or
nice.
Can't. And,
nice.
So, and you know, everyone around Thanksgiving is like, can I bring my pie on?
Is there, can I bring my pie? Can you?
You can if it's not liquid. You can bring a pizza on. I brought a pizza from New York to L.A.
Okay.
And actually, this Thanksgiving, we were in New York, and we flew back to go to a party, and we brought a really nice apple pie. And, you know, TSA is like, hey, can I have a bite? And I'm like, I wish I could give it to you, but.
Now, I do know when I go to this website for the TSA, it says due to the lapse in federal funding, this website's not being actively managed. But I guess the money's starting to flow back in. So it's not.
It's flowing back in. Yeah. So I went through security yesterday at JFK.
Yeah.
And actually, another way, by the way, to avoid these long security lines is get clear. It's all capitalized there. And that's a private security clearance.
That's where not you have in to, every airport, though.
It's not. And it's not in JFK, at least not in Terminal 8. So that's what I was worried about. But in LAX, I roll up because sometimes even the TSA pre-line is long.
Yeah.
But with Clear, you just go – and I don't even bring my ID. I just scan my fingerprints, and then they walk me to the front of the line, and I just go through security like that. I mean, celebrities are looking at me like, who the hell are you?
Can you get that with a criminal record?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I guess not.
I'm just out of luck. Okay.
Yeah. So do you have a criminal record? We should talk about that.
I don't. I'm just kidding. I actually had Clear for a while and in their first incarnation, but it was embarrassing.
It's completely different than it was. It's a new company now.
Okay.
And now they really have expanded because I didn't get it. In the beginning, it was just in like San Francisco and Orlando. But now every terminal, I believe at LAX has it. And it's really – I would just watch people cruise up, and I got it 2 years ago after being in a long line in Denver and just seeing these, you know, travelers just, you know, bypass the lines. I got to get it. So, and usually they'll give you 3 months free to sign up. So if there's like a crazy long line, you can sign up right there at the airport.
Oh.
It takes 5 minutes. So you can do it all, but you can't do it at the kiosks that are right next to security. They're usually, you know, a couple hundred yards away from there. Just find out in advance, but that is a way.
And of course, there's a third thing you can get called Global Entry, which includes TSA Pre.
Yes,
and that's good for international.
I mentioned it earlier. I thought I did.
Yeah,
it's $100 for 5 years and includes TSA Pre. So that's why I say get it instead of the TSA Pre.
Yeah,
and then if you have certain credit cards like American Express Platinum Card, the Chase Sapphire Preferred, they will reimburse you every 4 years for it.
Right. I would get it, but I don't want Interpol to know where I am now. So.
Well, they know where you are if you're traveling.
Okay. What else do you have for us? I like this My TSA app. I'm going to put that on my phone.
So
right
also
now.
Download the airlines, whatever airline you're flying, download their app. So I flew American yesterday and, you know, you can watch all the entertainment for free on your phone.
This is the new thing, right? They don't put entertainment systems in the planes anymore because they figure everybody's got a phone and an iPad.
Depends on the airline and also the aircraft. American, you know, between New York and L.A. and New York and San Francisco, they have plush planes, A321Ts.
Are you old enough to remember when they would roll a screen down in the center aisle of the plane and they would project a movie on it? Remember that?
We didn't know better. That was great. It was like being at the movie theater for me.
We didn't know better. Exactly. Johnny Jett, you'll find him at johnnyjett.com. You'll also find him on the Instagram and the Twitter under the same rubric. Not his real name. His real name is Johnny Jet Ski, but that's a long and tattered story.
I'm Polish. I'm not Polish, so I dropped it.
No. But Johnny Jet is always a wonderful guy to have on. We appreciate your time, Johnny. And stay home. Get better.
Thank you.
Are you going anywhere this week?
No, I am staying home.
Good.
And I'm like, please, no one call me. I don't want to... My ear was killing me on descent yesterday.
Worst thing in the world to have an earache. My wife did when we were traveling internationally last time.
It did not feel good. And all the flight attendants
said, oh, we know how that is. That's terrible. Johnny, have a great non-trip. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm surprised you don't get colds more often. Did you not do your Lysol wipes?
You know, I didn't, but I don't think it was from that, although you should do it. And even the hotel room, I was just reading another article today about how dirty
disgusting.
The remote control is. It's so bad.
On the other hand, you could make the case that it's good to expose yourself.
It's building, right. Right.
Because well, my son's sick, too. We think he got sick when we were in San Diego last week. And,
wait till he goes to school.
I know. I'm just going to be walking around. I'm going to walk around with a mask on.
But I'll tell you what, once you get through that, you never get sick again. Because you've had everything.
Well, I'm just not looking forward to being sick. And it's the worst when you're traveling.
Oh, I hate it. I know. Poor Lisa had a earache, an ear infection on the plane. And, yeah, when you ascended to she almost died. She was the most pain. She said it was worse than childbirth. She felt terrible.
Yeah,
it felt
not
so
good.
Bad. Yeah.
And actually, I usually carry nose drops. I basically have a
pharmacy in your bag.
A mini pharmacy in my bag. And right when we started to send and my ear started popping, I just jumped up to grab it and it was not there. I go, oh my God. I'm pretty sure my wife borrowed it or took it. And I was like, she obviously denies it, but I'm like, come on, where's my Afrin? I almost died yesterday.
Oh, don't blame her.
I'm kidding.
I always blame my wife when stuff's missing too.
I don't ever use that stuff because it's terrible for you, but you need it in emergencies like when you're descending on a plane.
Right. Well, feel better. Take it easy. Relax. If you get a chance to play a little volleyball, maybe do that. But
it's nice to be home. It's really nice to be home.
Yeah.
And for more than 2 days.
Yeah. We're going to go see Gaga in Vegas.
Well, I might be in Vegas in a couple of weeks.
Oh, we're excited. She has a residency at the new Park MGM.
She's all over the news today because Bradley Cooper made an impromptu visit last night, and they sang their song together.
Oh,
I didn't see
no.
The movie.
Oh, man.
It's all over the internet.
Oh, how could I have missed that?
Yeah.
Shoot.
So just search it, and you'll find it like that.
Well, we're going to see her Thursday night, I think. And then and we're staying at the Nomad, which is the top of the new park. You know, they took the Monte Carlo, and then there's some kind of like healthy place up at the top. So I'll let you know
MGM
how that
park.
Is.
I want to check that out.
I'll let you know. Yeah. Yeah,
I heard it's
be
good.
Fun. Yeah.
And Cher playing there, too? I think Cher's playing at the MGM park.
Maybe. I don't know. Gaga's doing two different kinds of shows. One, the Enigma show, which we're going to see, which is, you know, Poker Face and all that stuff.
And is she at MGM park?
Yeah. That's her residency, yeah.
They got big money.
And then, they sure do. And we're M Club members, of course. And then,
I am too.
That's a good deal because they own half the hotels on the Strip. And then, she's doing a piano, you know, singing. We're not going to see that. I would like to, but the tickets are expensive enough. I can't do both. So, but this is for Lisa's birthday, so that'll be fun.
Happy birthday to Lisa, and
our anniversary.
Awesome. Well, happy anniversary.
I was smart. We got married on her birthday. That way, only one gift, I thought. But no. it takes two. All right. Hey, have a great one. I hope you feel better.
Thank you.
Take care. Take care, Johnny. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Big Pee-wee, our musical director's playing the music. I'm doing the calls, answering the phones, talking tech at 8888 Ask Leo. Ed in Levittown, PA. Hello, Ed. Hello, Ed. Oh, wait a minute. I got to press the button. There we go. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Leo, my cord cutting guru.
Oh, it's time, is it?
Yes. I'm starting to take the plunge and get rid of Verizon and all the rental boxes and stuff.
Yay.
I bought a digital antenna, assembled it in my den, and hooked it up to my Samsung, and I was delighted to see all the channels.
Free. Oh, good.
Well, that's the good news, but I got bad news.
Uh-oh.
So I installed the antenna in my attic. And it was right above my exercise room. So I ran a cable down to, back in the 70s, we used to have directional antennas. So you'd get like a channel 6, and then you go a couple degrees to the left.
Yeah.
Counterclockwise and then clockwise, and then find a sweet spot.
Yeah. This has all changed because we've gone digital.
Well, that's what I found out. My Sylvania is an analog TV.
Oh, dear.
And then I reread the
Wait a minute. You're Sylvania. Let me just let that sink in for a minute. that's the one where the quality went in before the name went on, I believe.
Right.
Wow.
Well, anyway, so I have three digital antennas, you know, that I can scan, you know, the cable.
Yeah.
But I have four analog TVs.
Right. So for those, there are digital adapter boxes.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out what I could buy that's, you know, that's affordable, because when I went online to look at things, you know, I'm looking at $50 and north.
Right.
But it has all kinds of features besides just converting. So what can I buy that's affordable?
When the TV channels did this a few years ago, the FCC mandated that they had to move off their analog frequencies, because the FCC wanted these 700 megahertz frequencies, to digital frequencies. So when the TV companies did this, for a while they were offering free converter boxes, because there were a lot of people like you who said, well, but I won't be able to watch. So the basic digital converter boxes are fairly cheap, and Walmart still sells them. I see one for $25, $32. You don't need a recorder. I notice a lot of them have recording capabilities. Here's one, $20. Oh, here's a $10 one. So go to Walmart.com and look for digital TV converters. They're very cheap, because really it's not a complicated thing they're doing. The reason that a lot of people want more is maybe they want a DVR, for instance, the ability to record shows, that kind of thing.
I plan to get the Tableau DVR 4-channel.
Well, if you're going to do that, then a lot of DVRs will have the converter that you can plug the, you know, they'll have analog out. What you're looking for is any box that has analog out, you know, that means usually the yellow, red, and white RCA cables that go into your Sylvania TV.
Right.
Sometimes they won't even have that. You'll have to get RF out. But if your Sylvania has red, white, and yellow RCA connectors, you're pretty good.
Yeah, it does. All right, I have a part two question for the antenna.
Okay.
I'm supposed to be setting the antenna at 264 degrees from magnetic north. And when I'm in the attic, I've got my Boy Scout compass. So I was looking for a meter that would measure signals.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I could set the antenna once and for all. Otherwise, I got to set it, scan, and it's going to be a pain in the neck.
Yeah, no kidding. Let me look and see, but I am going to refer you to a couple of great websites that will be helpful in all of this. One is TV Fool at tvfool.com. The other is AntennaWeb at antennaweb.org. These are both sites that are there to help you cut cords, to use your over-the-air TV. TV Fool lets you enter in your address, and then we'll tell you what you can get, what antennas would be best for that. AntennaWeb also helps with antenna choice. And they do have a signal analysis locator tool. So I would suggest tvfool.com as a great place to start. And they'll help you figure out exactly what antenna, where to put it, where to aim it, and all of that. Now, it sounds like you already have that information. So I don't.
Well, yeah, I went on to antennasomething.org.
Yeah, AntennaWeb.
My zip code.
Yep, that's the same. And that's a good site. That's one of the sites. And then the other one is TV Fool, which maybe is a little bit. You know, Amazon sells signal measuring devices. You know who uses these a lot? People in RVs, because as you travel around, you need to aim. You know, when you get somewhere, you need to aim it. So I'm looking. The $19.99 on Amazon for the AGP Tech Good for Campers Digital Satellite Signal Meter Finder Meter for Dish Network Direct TV FTA LCD Graphical Display Backlight Compass Buzzer Control.
Amen, brother.
I love the name of products on Amazon, because the reason they do that is they want to capture every search, every possible search that can produce the result that they want. It looks like for satellites, and it has coax in and out, but there's plenty of these on Amazon, and they shouldn't cost more than $20.
So the satellite,
I'll tell you what, I like WineGuard. Let's see, that's a little more expensive. That's $70. WineGuard's a well-known name in this business. In fact, you may have a WineGuard antenna. A lot of the over-the-air antennas are from WineGuard. But yeah, if you look on Amazon for a signal meter, you'll find a bunch of them. I don't have one in particular that I know of that's good. I haven't done this particular thing. We don't live in an area where we can get anything. You're lucky you can get the signals. Are you getting them from Philly?
Yeah, I'm 28 miles from the...
Oh, you're right on the edge, yeah. That's another thing that happened when we went from this analog to digital world with broadcast television. There's something called a digital cliff. Analog degrades gently. And remember ghosts and you know, snow and all the things we used to see on our Sylvania TVs? remember that? That doesn't happen anymore. With digital, it either works or it doesn't. So there's a digital cliff. There was an area where you could still get some analog signal, decent signal, maybe not perfect, but you won't get anything at all with digital. But I presume you are seeing some stuff, right?
Yeah, when I set it up in the den, I saw probably 32 channels, and I was
awesome.
You know, my heart
awesome.
Leaped out of my chest, and I said, "Oh, wonderful.
Hallelujah! That's the best deal in television. You're actually going to get if you get a nice TV, you're going to get better HD from over-the-air signals than you would from cable or satellite. It's really good."
Well, my Samsung is 180p.
There you go.
High def.
There you go.
So I'll be happy in my den, but the people in the guest room, they're going to be a little annoyed.
Sylvania? You're giving us Sylvania? Come on. What the heck, Ed?
Panasonic and Emerson.
You know, you can get HD TVs now for a couple $100. They're cheap.
but then I have electronics that I have to...
Oh, yeah, all that. Yeah. I know how it is.
Yeah.
Remind me, not this... Next time in Levittown, don't stay at Ed's. You'll get the Sylvania.
And you'll serve yourself.
Ed, it's great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. I think this is, honestly, for a lot of people, it's going back in time, isn't it? But it really is.
Take a look at Sylvania's newest television first, Halo Light.
Ooh.
Now, here's the greatest television development since the big screen picture tube.
Absolutely.
Halo Light.
Halo
Light. A soft frame of light around the screen to reduce that sharp contrast between the brilliant picture and the darker outside surroundings.
You'll notice,
too, that Halo Light makes the picture look larger and more lifelike. You look for Halo Light on Sylvania's new Golden Jubilee models, the finest television sets ever built at any price.
Amazing. Next time you're in Levittown, get the Halo Light. 8888-ASK. I don't mean to tease you. I don't blame you at all. Although I have to say, the newer Chinese TVs, which are very cheap from TCL and Hisense, very inexpensive. I shouldn't say cheap. Very inexpensive because they really want to get in the U.S. market. Both TCL and Hisense now build Rokus into their TVs. So if you've got internet into your guest room, you connect that up and your guests can watch Netflix. That'd make them happy, wouldn't it? Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got your smartphones. We've got your smartwatches. We've got your MP3 players, your fax machines, anything. No, I won't. I'm sorry. I draw the line there. Anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO. Almost anything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536. Our website, techguylabs.com. That's where you'll find anything we talk about on the show. You get links there, information, and even add comments if you wish. And I know a lot of you have thoughts, products you'd like to recommend, questions you'd like to add, and that's all there, and it's all free, and there's no sign-up required. Just there because we love you. TechGuyLabs.com. Josh is next in Austin, Texas. Hi, Josh.
Good afternoon. It's been a while.
Well, it's good to talk to you again. Thanks for calling.
Yes. I have a website that I discovered, and I was wondering if you could pull it up and see what you think before you would stick it in the show notes. I know that somebody said it's very sore on the eyes, but...
What's the name of it?
It is ProtechDNA.com.
And what do they do at ProtechDNA.com?
They send you a kit where you can get it to... You put it on your valuables, and then you go in and register said... valuable.
So it's like chipping your dog, only you chip your computer.
Right, or that was an example they used. Somebody said you put it on your laptop, for instance, and if somebody steals said laptop and it ends up in the pawn shop, it'll get back to you.
So what is the way they market? How do they do that?
It's like it's small. It's like little dots. Only the police can see that with their little UV lights.
Oh, interesting. So they're UV dots. You get stickers? What do you get?
I haven't. Mine hasn't arrived yet, but from what I was listening to and what people were telling me about it, it's each kit is unique because they give you a pin that they generate, and then that is in the kit. So when you put that on your things, that's what, you know, because the example that they used.
Oh, I see what they're doing here. It's a sticker that looks like one of the typical asset stickers. If you've ever used a computer that your company provided, right, they'll have an asset sticker with a barcode on it. And, of course, any thief is going to immediately remove that. And their clever little ploy here is that there are also micro dots in the adhesive. So the adhesive behind the sticker, even if the sticker is removed, they say will be an asset to law enforcement. I think I would have to ask law enforcement if they know about this and if they have the readers, because, you know, I don't know. I mean, you'd have to. I'll be honest. When property thefts like this happen, police have kind of more important violent crimes to do with. They kind of don't pay a lot of attention to this, and whether they're going to go to pawn shops and look for your computer, I don't know. I doubt it. I'm looking at another thing that somebody in the chat room recommended, Theftmark Micro Dot Protection. This is on Amazon for $25. It's a hidden identification number, but again, that's no use because it's hidden, and unless the police and pawn shops know to look for it, it doesn't really matter. I guess if you ever, you know, you could always get one of those engraver tools. I used to do that. Remember, put your phone number or your name, engrave it onto the thing. I have to be honest with you. I'm not sure. It might make you feel better. I'd love it if a law enforcement officer listening would call and say whether or not this is a good idea, because it's going to require whoever receives the stolen property to know that's there and have some sort of reader. There are serial numbers on there. That's sufficient. So it's an interesting idea, though. Yeah, I think honestly, I've not heard of a lot of laptops ever recovered after being stolen. Maybe if they people did this, maybe. Naomi, Denver, Colorado. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hi, Naomi.
Always run a Mr. Smile with my silly butts. I just wanted to tell that guy that just was working on the computers and stuff.
Yeah.
Just put on your computer. Do not pawn. Even if you sell it to someone.
Oh, that's a good idea. And then the pawn shop will say, well, it says do not pawn on it.
That's right.
Will they really? They'll walk away? They'll say, no.
Yeah, my husband's in construction, and all of his guys puts on "Do not pawn."
Oh, I like that. I like that. It's like when they put on the keys, not "Do not duplicate."
Yeah, kind of like that.
Oh.
I just wanted to tell you, I was listening last weekend. That lady that almost got all of her stocks things.
Oh my goodness! Yes,
sold.
Yes.
This lady that we know, she's elderly, and she wanted to buy a car, so she went to Craigslist and she found this vehicle. And then it said that they sent her this thing from eBay that they wanted her to pay with eBay gift cards.
Oh boy, that's a bad sign.
Oh, and I just wanted to let your listeners be aware of this. The ghetto.
Did she fall? Did she fall for it? Did she do it?
Oh, she did.
Oh.
Luckily, they wanted $1,000 more to ship it, and then that's when she got suspicious, and
good,
she called us, and
good,
she says, I know you listened to all this tech stuff, and I said, oh, man, have you been spoofed?
You knew, didn't you, Naomi? You knew. Yeah, anytime they ask for payment in some sort of weird gift card thing, that's a bad sign. That's a real bad sign.
She showed it to us, and I mean, the eBay thing looked pretty good and everything, and they have a number, and you call, and you give them.
They do that because if you use a normal payment channel, there's ways to investigate it. But once you get a gift card, there's no way to trace it back.
Yeah.
So it's like saying, tell her next time. It's as if they said, please send gold bars. Pay for this in gold bars, and we'll be glad to sell you this car.
And
yeah.
Well, luckily she didn't get hooked for the $1,000 shipping.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that she didn't fall for that.
Yeah, she called us and
they got greedy. They got greedy. They went too far. Had they been less greedy, they might have gotten her money.
It was just so sad because she really needs a new car, and I'm like, oh.
Well, the thing to remember is the scammers, none of these scams are new, right? These are all the old. In fact, there's a great book called The Confidence Game. Highly recommended. I interviewed the author. She's a brilliant journalist, and she went deep. She talked to a lot of con men. Her name is Maria Konnikova, and it's on paperback, The Confidence Game, Why We Fall For It Every Time. And her point is these are the same old confidence games guys were playing, you know, the pigeon drop and all this stuff in the 30s and the 40s. You've seen them in the movies. But what happened with the internet is they now suddenly can play these games on people remotely, and they have access to far more people. And so I don't think there's more of it, or that this is any way innovative. Even that Nigerian prince scam, you know, the one where the guy says, I'm a Nigerian prince and I'm trying to get my money out of the country, and if you could help me, I'll give you $50 million. Even that scam is an old scam.
Well, we got one of those stupid IRS scams on
there you go.
About a week ago, and it was so muddled. You couldn't.
They're
really
so bad.
I know. Copy after copy.
Hello, this is Maria calling from the IRS. You are in arrears, and we will take your paycheck if you do not immediately call this number. It's terrible.
I know.
But it fools some people, and sadly, it often fools people like your friend, older people who maybe aren't savvy to the ways of the digital world. And I'm sorry. I'm glad that she didn't get bit. And it's good she has a friend like you who can kind of explain to her what these people are up to.
Yeah.
It's really a shame that that this stuff exists and it's out
there.
I just
wanted your listeners to be aware of everything.
Yeah, that's always a red flag. If somebody says, pay us with gift card, anything that's untraceable. Credit card, you can go back to the credit card company and say, hey, this guy ripped me off, and you can usually get your money back. Even if they, send it via an online payment service like PayPal, often there's protection. But that's why they wanted gift cards, because it's not even traceable, right? The Spanish Prisoner, that was a great movie, wasn't it? All about con games. I can't recommend this book more highly. Maria Konnikova is actually now, she's a very smart woman. She's become a professional poker player. She's writing a book about professional poker, and in order to do the research for the book, she studied, and she's actually quite accomplished. She's a winning poker player. But her book, The Confidence Game, highly recommended, came out a few years ago, and it's absolutely up to date as to the tricks, the grifts, the scams that are currently being perpetrated on the internet in much the same way they were perpetrated on the city streets years ago. Let's take a little tiny time out here. What do you say? And I'll be back to answer more of your calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Carlo in Ontario, Canada. Hello, Carlo.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great. How are you?
Not too bad.
How are things in Ontario?
Cold.
Yeah, I bet. coldest winter I ever spent was in Toronto. What can I do for you today?
Well, I got a bit of a tricky one for you today.
Oh, you wouldn't be the first today. This has been the day of tricky.
I got a small laptop from Asus.
Yep.
One USB 3.0 port on it.
3.0, okay.
Now, all of a sudden, it no longer reads USB 2.0.
Oh.
Used to. And it's backwards compatible. I know it.
Oh, yeah. All USB, as long as it's a Type A connector, you just plug it in and it should work. Yeah.
Now, I've reset the drivers. I've reset Windows. I tried putting a dongle on it. It shows that everything's working, but it doesn't transmit the 2.0 data through it anymore.
And a mouse doesn't work or a keyboard doesn't work? Do all the devices no longer work or just...
No device works.
No USB 2 device will work.
That's correct, yeah. But 3.0 works.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I'm looking at the spec for USB 3.0.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the biggest difference is speed, of course, and bandwidth. And I'm just wondering, you know... My first thought is, oh, well, maybe there's like some dedicated wires to support 2.0 or something like that. I guess that's, but it doesn't look like it. It's still a Type A connector. Front row 4-pin. Okay. So on the cable, if you look in it, the connector, there's two rows of pins, 4 pins each. The front row is USB 1 and 2 backward compatibility. The back row with 5 pins is USB 3. So, you've tried other cables, I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be, now, a couple of things can happen. I've seen this happen before with IEEE. You could actually fry the connector.
Whoa.
Yeah, you don't want to fry the connector, but you could electrically short out the connector. I would look on your laptop. I would, if you can, shine a light in there, maybe get a magnifying glass. Look at that front row. You know, when you look in there, there's the plastic insert to make sure the cable's inserted properly. But then if you look at the surface on the other side, there'll be connect contacts, the metal contacts. There'll be 4 and 5. The front row, as I said, of 4 pins is the USB row, 2.0 row. So it may be that those are, make sure they're clean and they're working, but it may be that those got shorted out. And so this was a valuable thing for me to do, is to look at the spec. And the way I didn't realize this, but now I know, the way they provided backward compatibility is by providing an entirely different set of connectors. So it is possible for those connectors to get damaged somehow. USB 2.0 compatibility would stop working without in any way impairing USB 3.0.
Wow.
Who knew that? I didn't know that. I'm glad you asked. I can't, that doesn't give you any... many fixes. And somebody in the chat room's saying, and I, Scooter X, once again to the rescue, he's saying, I bet you it's a driver issue. He says, I'm 99.99% sure it's a driver issue. I don't know if there are USB, I bet there are actually USB 2.0 drivers versus USB 3.0 drivers. The way to do that would be to go into your device manager, Windows 10.
Yep.
So if you hit Windows key X, you'll get a pop-up menu, then select Device Manager. And on mine, USB serial bus controllers. Yeah, that's interesting. I see 3.0. I don't see 2.0. But I'm wondering if some of those drivers are damaged. One way to do that maybe would be delete those drivers.
I did.
And restart and reinstall, and it still didn't.
Yeah. It just keeps
interesting.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I'm not going to be much help for you on this one. I don't know exactly anything else to do besides delete and reinstall the drivers. Deleting them from the device manager doesn't actually delete the software. So if you open those drivers, you can usually find the names of the files and delete those. That's kind of a more hardcore delete. Make sure power management, sometimes power management would turn off the device. Make sure that that's unchecked. That's by default checked on most devices in Windows. It's a little box under power management that says allow the computer to turn off this device to save power. Maybe uncheck that. Of course, worst case scenario, you could... Actually, this would be an interesting thing to do if you got a USB. Well, I guess this would give you some idea of, at least if it's the connectors. get a USB 3 hub, plug it in, that'll still work, and then try the USB 2 devices on that. That might help give you some idea. I don't know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Good question. Tis a puzzlement. Tis a puzzlement. Could be a Windows update that broke it. Yeah, the other thing to do is go to the Acer website and get the motherboard drivers and reinstall those. Actually, you know, that might be the first thing to do. Those drivers are usually part of the motherboard set, not standalone. That's a really interesting question. USB 2. USB 3 works, but USB 2 doesn't. Very interesting question. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to Big Pee-wee, our musical director. Such good taste Big Pee-wee has. 8888 Ask Leo. Half an hour to go on the Tech Guy Show for this weekend. Line 2, Kimberly in Detroit, the Motor City. Hello, Kimberly.
Hello, Leo. You are my hero.
Oh, Kimberly, I blush. Thank you.
So good to talk with you.
Nice to talk to
you. Thank you. Our son is stationed in the Army in Texas.
Well, he's my hero then. That's awesome.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you. We are so proud. He just switched barracks, and they're saying that they have boing boing for wireless internet.
Okay.
But it has to be a 6-month or year contract, and he's going to be deployed soon. So he's trying to find an interim so he doesn't have to pay all that money.
That's interesting. I don't know that. I didn't know that the U.S. Army was using. It's Boingo, by the way, not Boing Boing. But okay, I understand. Boing Boing's a blog. Boingo is internet service. I see. Boingo for military. Interesting. So that's what they're doing now. It's pretty fast. It is expensive. It's $35 a month for 10 megabits. $55 for 50 megabits. And they say you have to buy a year, huh?
6 months or a year, but it's going to be deployed in a couple.
Yeah, see, that's... Now, presumably, well, that's one thing to find out, is it available at every base, in which case I guess he could take his account with him if he gets redeployed somewhere else, and it might still work there. That's one thing about Boingo that's kind of cool. Wow, okay.
He went to Verizon, maybe looking for a MiFi card.
Sure.
Telling him they don't have one.
Does he have a smartphone?
He does. He has Verizon.
Okay. But he doesn't know where he's going to get deployed next, does he? Or does he?
He thinks maybe Korea, but...
That's the problem. You don't know. And by the way, when he gets to Korea, chances are good they'll have very high-speed internet there on base because South Korea has the best internet in the world. So it may be that he wouldn't even if he had Boingo, he wouldn't want to use it.
Right.
This is challenging. Yeah. For one thing, Verizon isn't great internationally. Their international plans are expensive. Their day passes, and that's not going to be a good solution for him long term.
Okay.
How much does he use a lot of internet in every day? Do you know how? Is he watching Netflix, things like that?
And he's gaming.
Okay, so there are travel solutions like the Solus, but that's not the Skyroam Solus. But that's not going to be a good choice for somebody who uses a lot of internet because they cap you at 500 megabytes a day. It is designed. I have one. It's designed for travel, so it would work everywhere. The other thing about the Skyroam that's nice is you pay by the month with no contract, or even by the day with no contract. So you might look at Skyroam.com. It's the same thing as a Verizon MiFi, but the negative, which really bugs me, and they kind of bury this, is you pay for what you use. It's fast. It'll work in South Korea, but it's $99 a month, so it's expensive, and they slow it down after 500 megabytes a day. And my guess is that's not going to be enough for him, especially for gaming.
500 megabytes a day or a month?
A day. So, you know, for email and surfing, that's probably fine. For watching Netflix, or depends on which games he's playing, but he'd probably use that up pretty quickly. And then it would get too slow. I'm surprised that Boingo requires 6 months in the military? Because that's not a good solution, because people are always getting moved around.
Exactly.
If you go to Boingo.com, they have a whole section on their military stuff. You might even just call them and ask them, look, he's going to get redeployed in 2 months. I don't want to buy 6 months.
Right, right.
They ought to give you a month. I mean, they give everybody else monthly. They even quote a monthly price. Why would they require 6 months? That seems wrong.
Right.
Is he getting it through the PX, or how is he getting it? Does he do it directly, or I wonder if he does it directly, or if...
I get that feeling. He just switched barracks, and it wasn't a problem in the last barracks, but now it is. And that's really all I can tell you.
Might be worth a visit to the... I didn't even know Boingo did for the military, but they have a whole section, Boingo for Military. Might be worth a call to them. Make sure that he's understanding it properly. It doesn't seem right that they would require a six-month sign-up, especially for people who are going to be moving around, and where they go is not in their control. That's just not right.
Right.
And he,
right.
I bet you he won't even need it in South Korea. And they don't, by the way, they mention Okinawa and Japan. Oh, yeah, they do mention South Korea, Camp Mujuk. That's the only one. So if you look at their map, it's not at every location. Yeah, this seems wrong to me. This seems like it's not the right thing to do. They have a special line for military. If you go to Boingo.com, you can call them and see. There have to be other solutions out there. You're right. Verizon wouldn't be the right choice, especially if he doesn't know where he's going. If he were going somewhere else in the U.S., Verizon would be fine. But Verizon internationally is not cheap. You don't have to have an account with another company to just get a MiFi. You can go to T-Mobile or some other company. But again, we don't know where he's going.
But if he goes to AT&T, let's say, and gets a MiFi card, will it work for his Verizon phone just for these couple of months?
Oh, it's just, well, no. Yeah, of course, because Wi-Fi is Wi-Fi. So he can use his phone to join the Wi-Fi. He'll still have a Verizon phone number and all that. But when he wants to use data, it'll use that. That's right.
So we'd have to open an AT&T account.
Yes, but if you go to T-Mobile, AT&T, Sprint, shop around, maybe you can find an account that will give you the speed you want at a price you want without a long-term contract. That's the key, isn't it?
Gotcha.
I'm surprised. I mean, Boingo's good. I've used Boingos on planes, and I think they're pretty good. They do, for the price, give you up to 3 devices, which is nice. They even offer TV, which is kind of cool, too. I would call them and say, hey, look, he's going to be transferred in 2 months. What can you do for me? I bet you they can do something for you.
And I appreciate you.
If they can't, that's shameful. You know, support our guys and gals in the service and give them something that works for them.
That's right.
Right? So the base doesn't have its own Wi-Fi. You have to buy it.
That's my understanding.
Well, that's another thing. goodness gracious, your son's given up a lot to serve our country. They ought to give him at least some Wi-Fi.
That's right.
What game does he play?
He's on the latest Xbox.
Ah, and is he do you know what games he likes? Is he Call of Duty guy, or?
He likes Call of Duty, Halo, Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, yeah. Right? Red Dead Redemption 2. Very fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, that's a great way to pass the time when you're kind of sitting there waiting to find out what's next.
Exactly.
Hey, it's really nice to talk to you. Thank you for your son's service. Thank you for being a good mom and helping him out.
Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Yeah, that seems wrong to require 6 months. That seems nutty. Rocket 88 says if he's on Yongsang in South Korea, they've got everything. Plenty of internet. It seems to me, once you get to South Korea, he's going to have fast internet choices, maybe a local provider. What you really want is to pay for just the next couple of months of Boing Boing Boingo or whatever it is, and then wait and see what happens when you get to Korea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Back to the phones. Some, by the way, looks like I was. We were looking through the Boingo site for the military. It looks like there is no minimum contract that you can't. Maybe he was looking at the consumer version, the military version. They even say if you're moving base, we can move it with you, or you can cancel it. I think they're pretty easygoing. I want to give Boingo some credit. I think that they actually do look like they provide the appropriate service for our men and women in service. On we go to the show. Line one, Roger in Pasadena. Hello, Roger.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
Well, I got a bit of a problem.
Uh-oh.
I have a 3-terabyte drive in my desktop tower that's getting full, so I bought a 4-terabyte.
That's a lot of data. What are you putting in there?
Well, I collect the history of American radio, and it's filled Ooh. With old radio programs.
Ooh, now I'm interested. That sounds great.
Anyway, so I bought a 4-terabyte drive to replace it. I put the 4-terabyte in an external USB 3 enclosure, formatted it, copied everything over from the old drive. But when I went to put the new 4-terabyte into the desktop, Windows didn't see it. And nothing I could do would bring it up.
So when you copied it over,
yeah,
it saw it, or you didn't. I mean, it saw it then, right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, how else would you have been able to copy it?
Right. If it's in the external enclosure.
Oh, I see.
It's just fine.
I see. It could see it as a USB drive, but when you you took it out of the enclosure and put it into the machine.
Right.
All
right.
Right. It won't see it then.
Right. And I opened up a partition manager, and it saw the physical drive.
Right.
There was nothing on it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, USB kind of hides the interface from the operating system. So a couple of things. First of all, you're backing up that data, right?
Right.
Somewhere else, right?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. I don't want to get a call from you in 6 years saying the drive died and I don't have anything. The other thing, you might want to keep the old drive and keep the new drive. Keep them both.
Okay.
I think the issue might be the size of the drive. What version of Windows are you using?
Windows 10.
Okay.
The 1803.
And it's a modern operating system.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe the thing to do, if you don't mind recopying it, would be to do it while it's inside the machine. So okay. At this point, it might be worth, I mean, I'm not sure why it doesn't see it. It may be that it wasn't, as I said, the USB kind of hides the low-level details. It mm-hmm. might be that it wasn't partitioned properly or formatted properly. Maybe Windows, I don't know, why... Why wouldn't it see it? If it could see it as a USB drive, it means it's formatted properly. USB might... The reason I was asking about the size is USB might hide the geometry of the drive.
Mm.
But, on the other hand, you have a modern machine with modern Windows, right? How old is the machine?
Oh, 3 years old.
Yeah, no, I should see a 4-terabyte drive without any problem. It was the older machines that had problems. I am not sure why it can't see it. Of course, if you put it in the machine, use the partition manager, set it up, formatted it, saw it as a D drive, and then copied it. By the way, the copy would be much faster. You don't have to wait for all those hours of copying. And then you'd know it was working. You'd be able to see it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm actually not sure. I understand what your question is, hey, I already copied it. How can I make it visible?
Right. Okay, so put the new drive in, put the old drive in the enclosure and copy it over that way.
Oh, I see. You don't have room for 2 drives in your machine?
Well, I've got room for 5 drives, but they're all in there.
They're all used. Ah.
Yeah.
You don't want to, you know, one way to do this would keep that drive as an external drive.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't see it. Why replace the old 3-terabyte? Why not keep the 3-terabyte and have the 4-terabyte?
Okay. I can try that.
Yeah, and then keep it as an external drive. It doesn't. The speed's not important if it's just data, right?
Right.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure why. How you could see a drive You didn't format it. You just took it from the box and it worked?
Oh, no. I formatted it.
You did. All right. And it's NTFS.
Right.
Boy, I don't understand why, if you could see it in the USB enclosure and then you put it in, it might be something about your system. That this the connector it's on. Is it on a standard SATA connector?
Mm-hmm.
You connected power, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's got power and data connected.
Right. And as I say, if I open the partition manager, it sees the physical drive.
That's right. It sounds like it needs a drive letter. You need to assign a drive letter, people are saying to it. I don't know why Windows wouldn't just do that automatically. But you can't assign a drive letter to the drive if the, this is the chat room, remember, going into disk management and you click the drive and then change drive letter.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can do this right where you were in the disk management, partition manager and assign it to the D drive or the E drive. It may be that that didn't happen. It should happen automatically, but you can give it a D drive or an E drive or an F drive. Maybe try that.
Okay, I will.
Maybe try that. You're not booting from it, right? You just.
Oh no.
You just want to see the data.
Yeah.
Right. We know the data's there. You copied it under USB. Maybe if for some reason Windows didn't say, make this your D drive. Maybe that's why I can't see it. So give that a shot. It's certainly non-destructive to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
And it might be a good time to go out, as the chat room is saying, get a network attached storage system. When you have a lot of data like that, the best way to do it is to get a multi drive unit, an enclosure that you'd put 4 or 5 drives in. That would give you 10 or 15 terabytes, but it has redundancy. So if any one of those drives fails, you just put another one in. It rebuilds. You never lose data. That's a really good way to back up if you have massive amounts, terabytes of data like this, to back it up locally. And then, you know, what I do is I use Synology, very good NAS drive maker. NAS stands for Network Attached Storage. It's basically a computer minus a keyboard, mouse, and monitor. I buy mine from Synology, and Synology has a feature that you could have two of them, one at home, one at work, if they're identical, and they would synchronize. Now you have offsite backup for a huge amount of data. You've got two copies of it, one at home and one at work. It's pricey, but you're storing a lot of data. And at this point, I think it's so important that you have all your data. You don't want to lose any of those great radio shows. I think it'd be worth doing that. Wow. I'd love to hear it. I hope you're putting some of those online. Maybe it's just a personal collection. A lot of this old-time radio is online. I remember my dad and I, when I was a kid, there was a radio station. We couldn't get it in the house. So he and I, it was a good bonding moment, would go out and sit in the car and listen to the Lone Ranger and the Shadow. I'm not so old that these were their first run. Even then, it was called old time radio. I just want to say this. But we had to sit in the car because we couldn't get reception in the house, and we'd listen to those old shows, and that was great. Those were the days. Never forget that. It's worth keeping them. Some of these shows, they're so fun. They're a little corny these days, but a big piece of our history. Thanks to Damian Peewee, our musical director today, Kim Schaffer, our phone angel. Thanks to you for joining me. I'll see you next time. I hope you'll come back and we can talk tech again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.